Guys, it's always a pleasure to join you and to connect with you there in Green Bay. I'm doing fantastic. And how about you guys? How are things holding up for you there?
Beautiful.
Awesome. Harry and I will say this, I was within three shots of Harry this morning. And Harry can play
what?
Now. So we got after it this morning. Teed off at 6:30, done by 9:30, in and out. It was
Whoa.
A nice walk. A 3-hour, 18-hole walk was beautiful, Brady.
Nice job. Where'd you go, man?
Over to Crystal Springs in beautiful Seymour, Wisconsin, about 15 miles right straight west of Green Bay.
So, yeah, my home course there was Thornberry. That's the one I always go out
the official golf
Brown
course.
Brown County.
Yeah, that is
yeah,
the official
man, I had like
course.
The best outings ever in golf on those courses, I'll tell you. And then we went golfing, about 3 weeks ago, because AJ had his retirement. I mean, it was a month ago. AJ had his retirement party. And we went golfing. I don't know what the place was. It was a golf course designed by Jack Nicklaus. And to say the least, guys, I probably scored in the 200s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even pull the driver out of the bag just because I just couldn't hit the ball. And Tausch the whole time, because Mark Tausch was really into golf. I don't know if you guys knew that about him, but the whole time he's looking at me so disappointed, like I was his son that had let him down. He's shaking his head, and I'm like, what, man? I just don't practice. I was like, dude, you come to Southern Cali. Come to Southern Cali. I'll take you out some boogie boards. We'll do some mountain biking. We'll go skiing, and then we'll see how you hold up. That's what I've been doing instead of golfing. But still, I love golfing. Don't get me wrong. It's just out here in Cali, we have other stuff going on, and we just don't have courses as nice as Thornberry, Brown County, Crystal Springs, you know, courses Jack Nicklaus has one time had, or Nicklaus, excuse me, had one time designed and so on and so forth. But that's good news for you there, Chris. Good news. You got out and got
no
hit
doubt.
The links there.
Although I have had Jack Nicklaus like rounds. But Brady, I know you're just excited about the relaxed celebration rules. That's probably tickling you. And as I was saying, the decapitation, the Band-Aid on that, taking 5 minutes off the overtime, really. Just your thoughts on some of the moves by the NFL this week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the dancing celebration one, come on. I mean, that one's a long time overdue because it was going down the wrong direction to where, I mean, you're making out the league, you're making out the referees as the bad guys. And we heard it this last, what was it, 2-3 months ago, to one of the referees came out and said there's nothing worse than after some kid makes a spectacular play, scores a touchdown, and starts celebrating, to have to throw a flag, especially if the celebration isn't disrespectful to the opponent, nor does it have any inappropriate innuendos. I mean, it's just such a buzzkill, you know, and it's so judgmental, too. Every week you don't know what you're going to get. And so I thought that was very insightful. And the NFL, you look all the way back to the early 80s to when it started to gain traction in the public's eye, it was a lot because of those dances in the end zone. I mean, if you remember some of those video VHSs they had, you know, they'd have like the world's or the hungriest man. They'd have also football follies, and then they'd have like, and some of those movies or those VHSs, they'd have sections on the best touchdown or interception or whatever celebrations. It was so entertaining to watch. I mean, that's what was part of the lifeblood of what we knew the NFL to be. And lo and behold, they're starting to take away from that. And it was very insightful of them to pull that back and to now let these guys celebrate. Because another thing, too, is the millennials want to see that. And right now, that's the demographic. Either the NFL is having a hard time measuring if they're actually tuning in or they're not able to connect with them as much as they like to. But now, with this sort of unleashing of the or at least liberating, you could say, these guys to celebrate however they see fit, as long as it's, you know, not overboard and disrespectful and things of that nature, you have a chance now to hook some of these millennials, because I, not to say I'm a millennial, but I think a lot like millennials, and you have to have that flavor to the game or it becomes far too black and white, it becomes far too boring. It affects your viewing experience when all of a sudden these guys are like on pins and needles after they score a touchdown because they don't know what to do. I don't want to get a 15-yarder for my team and so on and so forth. So I thought that was a good move. The overtime one, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, these guys, it's like, what in the world and where in the world do you get your information? What are you thinking? This doesn't make any sense. I get when they're saying, well, you know, it's going to help us protect against potential injuries, but how many teams really ever even go into overtime that span more than 10 minutes anyway? Nobody. I mean, to me, it wasn't the length that was the issue. It was the structure, the model they were implementing. It's a dumb model because it doesn't solve the issue. We saw it last year. How many ties did we have last year? Two? At the very least that I knew. Well, I was a part of one in a London game with the Cincinnati Bengals. To where after the game, you're like, what should we do here, guys? You know, it's like, I don't know if we should celebrate. I mean, we got the overtime, but couldn't finish out the deal. And so they got to go to more of the college rules, I thought. And not to say that you do the exact same rules, because that can get a little elongated. But my proposal was always like, hey, why don't we go to the college rules, 25-yard line, drive starts, and then if you score a touchdown, guess what? You don't kick extra points. You go to the two-point. And over, you know, I mean, really quickly, that's going to – somebody's not going to be able to convert that two-point conversion, whereas somebody did, and the game's going to be over. You're going to decide a winner. And it's far more entertaining because you're going to see your best players playing more, which, heck, that's what everybody wants to see in the first place. So I don't like what they did with overtime. I thought that was very out of touch, very delusional, very like the NFL as of late. But then they sort of went back into the neutral position with the fact that they, with the celebration rules, started to alleviate those a little bit, let the guys express themselves, because I think that's important. So we got Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde at work here, guys. I don't know what they're doing. Where are they going? Where are they coming from? I don't know who they're talking to. Hopefully, you know, this over time, they stop, you know, talking to guys like Ted Wells, who has no idea about the,
you know, Brady,
you know, deflated footballs. But go ahead. Well, I'm just on a ramp here. But
with the overtime, well, yeah, and that's awesome. Well, with the overtime, though, here's my thing. If you have some kind of hokey way of deciding it, it might be entertaining for the fans, and it might give you a conclusion or, a final where you have a winner and a loser. But I say at the expense of the integrity of four quarters, where guys like you are battling down in, down out, and you're going to let it up to a kicker or up to a two-point conversion or up to a – I mean, I think some ways if it's a tie, so be it. You know, you get in the postseason,
what?
You play 15 minutes, but you live with the tie and you move on.
What?
If that's what
are
it is, that's what it is.
Are you talking about, Chris? Are you serious that
common
somebody
sense.
Just slipped something in your drink? I think
common
you are
sense.
On some kind of drugs right now.
Caffeinated.
No. We need to stay away from these ties because that's the worst thing for the fans. It's the worst thing for the players.
Well,
it gives the game
so
a huge
it?
You know, it's like putting a mustache on the Mona Lisa, man. What are we doing here? Why are we even competing? You go out and you lay your body on the line, man, because you want to win, and you want to know that you have a chance to win. You don't want to have to go through that whole – I mean, at that point, it's like, what the heck? Why are we even playing games? I mean, it just – it compromises the very objective why you're out there.
Sometimes, though, two teams, they prepare for each other, and they're just that close. And if you don't have a winner, it's a better way of playoff seeding decision-making than something as arbitrary as point differential. Wouldn't you agree with that? A tie matters.
Wait a second.
I mean, the tie matters.
What are you talking, point differential? That's what the whole game's about. That's what you decide who wins and loses by, and you need to have that. You need to give those guys a satisfaction, that team who wins, of knowing that, hey, they went out and they did what it took to win that day. Although it was paper thin, the difference, they still won. And also, you need to be able to give the losing team that sensation of, well, we fell short. Okay, let's go back to the drawing board. Let's look how we can improve, and let's look how we can taste the sweetness of victory next week. That has to happen. That is the essential element of competition. If you guys don't believe it, go read my book. I wrote about a whole book about this, by the way.
I have it.
The True Spirit of Competition. We'd completely compromise it if we were good with ties. And unfortunately, that's where the NFL is right now. They're good with ties. That is a huge problem.
Wow.
We need to nip this in the bud, and they had a chance to do it, and they completely blew it. It's like the Ted Wells report with the inflated footballs, where they had no idea what the gas laws were. I mean, let's go take a fifth grade, you know, physics class or whatever, science class. You'll figure that one out. And I mean, it's like one. Like I said, I can't figure out the NFL. I mean,
wow,
sometimes
the problem,
you're
Brady.
Right with the celebration, but other times with these overtime rules and the Ted Wells report, man, they like miss it so far. You're wondering who in the heck. Or who's running the operation there?
Las Vegas hates ties. Las Vegas is running the operation. They hate ties.
Well, my thing is, too, like, anybody who did not like the previous overtime rule, 15 minutes, and we all know the format and all that, nobody changed their mind based on this quote-unquote big change the NFL made. Like, wow, you kept everything the same and moved it to 10 minutes. Whoop-de-freaking-do, what did you accomplish?
5 less minutes of crappy overtime.
Yeah, I guess.
That's my point. The overtime's the worst. I mean, the structure, the college football structure model, man, is at work, it's entertaining, and if you take out the kickers, field goals you're going to have. But if you take out the extra points, now you make it to where the probability of a winner being decided quickly only increases, and that's what we all want. We just want a winner decided, and we want it to be done in an entertaining way. Unfortunately, the NFL missed the boat on this one by a mile.
Assistant Commissioner Brady Papinga here on the Fan.
Brady, I got to ask you. I saw Brian Bulaga and some of the linemen posted pictures on Twitter. Aaron Rodgers apparently got them all ATVs, the Polaris General. I guess they go like $20,000 a pop. I don't know. I'm not an ATV guy or an expert, but they look pretty sweet. And if that's a Christmas gift for the O-line, then that's a pretty sweet Christmas gift. What's the coolest gift you've ever received? And how many during your time with the Packers? Anything cool?
Yeah, with the Packers, we were a bunch of stingy suckers, man. We would just sort of give gifts to our families. We never gave gifts to each other that I knew of. Heck, I may have, maybe guys around me are getting gifts, and actually, I'm going to pull this one back. I just had a revelation.
Uh-oh.
Okay, this is what happened, guys. Back in 2007, as a matter of fact, Al Harris gifted every single one of us a suit. And it's because we had won the division and we were going to the playoffs. Now, if you remember back at that time, I don't know if it was, that was before Deflategate, but there was something. Oh, no, it was Nick Barnett. I don't know if you guys remember the story, but we were getting ready to play the Minnesota Vikings. And all of a sudden every practice, or it would be a meeting. This was a meeting. So this is Saturday morning, excuse me, before we were playing on Sunday. We'd have this like last minute meeting with the defensive coaches, and it was sort of our last time getting together before we'd actually go play. And at the time, Bob Sanders, he would always break down on the slides like our opponent and, you know, what we were going to do. And he had like signs like, or a slide like, 10 is the one, like mental is the physical when you're preparing. Stuff like, little sayings like that. And we'd sort of giggle at it and was like, whatever, dude, We'll humor you there, buddy. And so all of a sudden, instead of having like his run-of-the-mill slideshows, he's just showing, because the week before, that's what happened, the week before, Adrian Peterson broke the all-time, and I don't know if it's been broke since, maybe it has, but the all-time rushing record in a game. He rushed for like almost 300 yards or more against the San Diego Chargers in Minnesota. So Batty Sanders was just, so scared. And so his slides were all about how great Adrian Peterson were, how his record, this, that, and the other. And Al Harris was, like, so sick of it. And, we were all just sort of like, whatever, whatever. And all of a sudden, I hear Al go, hey. And he immediately, like, rudely interrupts Bob Sanders. Bob's like, oh, what? And Al gets up there and goes, hey, we hold this guy under 100 yards. I'm giving each of you $500. Or maybe it was 1,000. I don't know, 500 or 1,000 bucks. I don't remember the exact number. And if you guys go back to that game, we held Adrian Peterson to 80 yards. And lo and behold, he paid us all up. And Nick Barnett, they're like, man, you guys really played well against Adrian Peterson. And Nick was like, oh, yeah, we had a little extra incentive in there, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden, that's against the collective bargaining agreement to get extra money or have extra incentives.
Brady,
so all of a sudden, Ted
hunter.
Thompson's like, he's all puckered up now because he's like, the NFL's looking at us. We're looking like we're breaking rules. And Ted's so into, having a clean program and everything being on the up and up. And so fast forward to this time where I'm getting gifted this sweet suit. Al's got his tailor in the building. The equipment guy's Red. He's coming up. So I don't know if you guys have met Red. He's phenomenal. The best in the business, and his guys are the best out there. Anyways, Brady, you got to go fit up for your new suit, man. I'm like, oh, sweet. So I go out in the hall on the way out to the tunnel to Lambeau Field, and there's a side room where the tailor's at. And as I'm getting ready to go in there, all of a sudden, here comes good old Ted Thompson. Apparently, he caught wind that I was – and this wasn't nothing more than just we had been – we'd won the division. We're going to the playoffs. And Ted's like, nope, this has to stop right now. We're not doing any more of this. And lo and behold, I didn't get my suit, man. So I was like so disappointed because Ted was so uptight about all that had happened with Nick. So you could actually blame Nick Barnett for that whole fiasco. If it wasn't for him blabbing his mouth to the media, nobody had ever known about it. And I'd have got probably the greatest gift known to man from my teammates. But instead, I went to the Dallas Cowboys, and we would have these gift exchange parties at the holidays. And I don't know. What did I get? Like, DeMarcus Ware, he gave us some sweet shoes, like these really fashion-forward shoes that I wear probably once a year. And then I got a barbecue from some dude from Montana, gift certificates to, nice restaurants and stuff like that. But that was probably the best. But, man, that suit from Al was going to be sweet, man. It was going to be like a double-breasted, whatever they call it, with a nice vest underneath. I was going to look sweet, just like Al did when he used to wear his meat coats on the road. But, nope, Ted, he intervened and immediately stopped it.
Hey, Brady, got to ask you, on a serious note here, actually, and I know we have a lot of fun always when we talk, but with what happened in Manchester with the bombing, and I wanted to get your perspective as an athlete who plays in these arenas and, filled stadiums, soft targets, as they call them. And I know the U.S. is stepping up the security and all that in anticipation of being able to stave all that off. But just some of your thoughts on that and what we've seen around the world and how that may impact, the sports we love and the athletes we love and, our way of life.
Well, I would imagine that they're going to just make a bigger perimeter, because we were in both. I did both international games last year for the NFL, one in Mexico City and then another up in London. And in both cases, the perimeter, meaning when they start to check you and they start to sort of look at and evaluate the crowd, I mean, we were talking like miles away from the stadium. And Mexico City, for example, they had a perimeter, because in Mexico they have like, I don't know how many different levels of cops and police. So they had like one level of, and I'm talking like sort of how they rank. So they have like sort of the everyday guys that are out on the streets. They formed the first perimeter, and I'm talking they were lined like hand to hand, shoulder to shoulder around the stadium, and it was about a mile away. And they were looking at people walking on the sidewalk. They were looking around, and then as you got closer and closer to the stadium, that the sort of you'd go up the rank of the police officers, and it was like checkpoint after checkpoint after checkpoint. I mean, it was just layer after layer of security, and the same was in London. And I mean, London had the dogs, and they were doing the same thing, man. They had their military guys out there. And there was a time back, when was it? It was back, you know, what was it, 2013, 2014. I was doing a Dallas Cowboys playoff game. They were playing the Lions. That was 2014, the week before they ended up facing the Packers in Lambeau, and where the Packers ended up winning.
The catch, yeah.
But, yeah, with that catch, with Dez Bryant. But anyway, before that, I mean, I walked in 3 to 4 hours before the game, and, I mean, they had Navy SEAL guys decked out like they're getting ready to go to war. I mean, they were like, and they were like supposed to hide because they were all getting, and it was interesting because they were in the tunnel and they're all sort of getting like a briefing of what they were going to do. And then they just sort of disappeared and just started to blend into the backdrop, you know?
Wow.
So, I mean, so the NFL is taking this. Oh, yeah. I mean, these guys were decked out with their, and I like that. You know, I think it's important to have, you know, and I saw this in Uruguay all the time. As a matter of fact, whenever they had exchanged money at the banks, like they'd get army guys with the biggest guns you could imagine, and they would just stand there, and they're basically saying to anybody, look, if you want to like try to test us, even though you may have bigger guns than us, it's going to be one hell of a fight, you know? And so I like that. I like that, at least. And for some reason, the U.S., we don't do that as often. Even in Germany, when I went there for a convention, I mean, their security is unbelievable in terms of they have their actual military guys out there visible, sending this message that, hey, do not mess with this situation. Let's keep things as business as usual because this is not going to turn out well for you. So I would say that we're going to see more of that, and I like that. I do believe the NFL and the U.S. in general has done a nice job of sort of keeping those guys in the backdrop because they don't want to create this kind of panic or this militaristic kind of world. But it looks like that's just how it's going to have to be, and I like it. Honestly, I like to see the guys dressed out, full gear, big-time artillery, sending the message and making sure that they have checkpoints as you get into the stadium, because that would be the biggest catastrophe on a lot of different fronts. Because one thing that was interesting is Harry Fleischer, if you guys remember him, he was the spokesperson for George W. Bush. And when they had the 9/11 attacks, one of the first things that George W. Bush wanted to get up and running again, because we all know that Sunday in the NFL and all sports, baseball included, did not participate. There was no sports. But he said the number one thing he wanted to get going to show like camaraderie, show solidarity, and get us together as a country was he wanted to start playing football again. Because as a government, they understand the benefits of singing the national anthem, united, having an event that people could go to sort of get out of their own world, and so on and so forth. And so I'll tell you that like sort of the lifeblood of a lot of our patriotism comes from our participation in these huge sporting events. Look, in Lambeau, you got the flyovers, the military is very involved. And so it would
Chris
be a Gizzi, huge
the
hit
scene
on our,
with the flag running out, sprinting onto the field.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
but
iconic.
It would be a huge hit on our culture. You know, it's like this is like priority number one if you are the United States government. So I'd imagine they're going to make sure that asset is protected at the highest degree.
Brady Papinga here on The Fan. Now, on another note, shift gears to on the field for the Packers. There was an article in the Green Bay Press Gazette. Pete Doherty pointed out pretty much that, you know, the Packers checked basically every box they needed to in terms of need, but the lone question mark right now, still outside linebacker. When you lose Julius Peppers, Dayton Jones, kind of those edge rushers, elephant position, whatever you want to call it. I know they drafted Vince Beagle, but that's one guy, and you're kind of banking on guys like Kyler Fackrell and Jayrone Elliott taking that next step. I know you're not a big fan of Nick Perry, but as a guy who's played the position, what's your opinion of the Packers' outside linebacker depth right now?
They're fantastic. You got Clay Matthews. What more do you need? And I'm not being biased. The guy, if you let him go and you use him like Dom loves to use him, they use him as they call the spinner, the floater. There's another number of names where you basically make a three-man line and then you have him sort of walk around and he picks where he wants to go. And They drop blitzes for him. He's one of the best that I've ever seen being able to do that because he's so explosive, he's decisive, and he's slippery, meaning he's tough to block. So they can manufacture a rush is my point with three guys and Clay. I saw it firsthand. And so I'm not too concerned with them. As long as they can keep Clay healthy, and the key is it's going to come down on Winston Moss and his ability to be able to do a snap count, to make sure that Clay isn't getting worn down and running situations to where, you know, he's out there basically just as an edge setter. You know, you want to try to take him off the field, preserve him for those impactful moments where he's got to go get after the quarterback. So, to me, because that's the number one thing that wears you down at that position is you have to stop the run. Okay, now let's go rush the passer, and you're already sucking gas, you know, from having to stop the run. It takes a little bit off your pass rush. So that's where guys like Kyle, I was standing with Kyle Fackrell, that should be his priority is to get stronger in the lower body so he can go set that hard edge, relieve guys like Clay, so that Clay can then be more effective as he rushes the passer. So it's going to be a combination of, you know, keeping Clay healthy, which that comes down to managing his snaps and managing when he plays precisely, and then just some luck, you know, because Clay's had some bad luck with injuries this last couple of years. So if you can keep him healthy, I don't see any problem with their pass rush. And you know, Nick Perry's that kind of wild card. I don't think teams look at him like I look at him. I don't think they're worried about him. I don't think they think he's very good. And lo and behold, he'll surprise you every so often as he had, 11.5 sacks last year or something to that nature. So, you know, that's going to be a wild card in their pocket too. And Elliott's played well. He's had his time. But I would say if you got Clay, you're good.
Brady, last thing, that Nitro package, the six DBs that they can put behind their five pass rushers, how good would you be with Kevin King and Devon House out on the perimeter, Demarius Randall in the slot, Josh Jones, the rookie, kind of in that lurk position, and then the two safeties behind him, Ha-Ha and Morgan Burnett?
Demarius Randall scares me, man.
Really?
Yeah. Demarius, he had to, well, you know, actually, I take that back. He had his moments, but he was showing some signs of coming around. But, that's a formidable lineup. I mean, if you consider King already a guy that could contribute immediately, which we're all hoping he does when you look at where he was drafted and his skill set and how it translates to the NFL and what Dom wants to do with him. So, I think that should be pretty good. And I really like to hear a lot about this Josh Jones guy. I mean, he seems like the kind of guy that can do a lot of good things. He almost seems like an upgraded version of Micah Hyde. You know, we're all having hype because we're in May right now. But I'll tell you what, if Josh Jones goes out there and he can sort of pick up the slack where Micah Hyde left off, plus a little extra oomph, you know, with his ability to step in the box and be that kind of hybrid safety linebacker, then that Micah Hyde exit and the fact they let him go makes all the sense in the world because they knew that they could get this guy. I mean, that would be, you know, one of those things where you just have to go give Ted some credit, man, and say, man, way to know your stuff. Way to know you had a guy that you could upgrade in college. You know, so that's going to be interesting. But I like the start of hearing him, how he's making plays. He's active in these OTAs. Not that it means everything, but that shows you that this guy just has one way of playing, and generally that translates into being a guy that when he puts the pads on, he ends up being pretty productive. But I think he's the guy that's going to make it click for him because Dom's always been sort of looking for that kind of guy. I remember when I was there, it was Brandon Chiller, that we would try to make him into a linebacker, safety type, you know, and so Dom was always enamored with that kind of guy. And he'd experimented with Micah Hyde, Morgan Burnett, obviously he had him in there last year at times. And so I think Josh Jones is just perfectly built to be that hybrid guy that you can walk out on the slot, keep him in the box, drop him back in the half deep, maybe in the middle of the field, safety kind of thing, depending on what you're doing. And so I think they got the guys. The question is can the young guys get up to speed quick enough and can they be impactful enough out of the gates?
Great stuff, Brady. Enjoy the holiday weekend, my friend.
Oh, I will, guys. You too. And enjoy your time up there golfing, man. It sounds like it's that time of year to start hitting the links, baby. Love it up there when it's that guy.
I'll be golfing. Marcus will be cheering the Brewers on in person.
Bingo.
Oh, nice, Marcus. Way to be, buddy.
Yeah, baby.
Make sure you lay off little Grandpa's cold medicine for me.
No, I don't drink. I don't drink at all.
Hey, look at you, man. Way to be. So
that was a lie.
You just got that natural personality. You don't have the one in the bottle. That's good.
Right.
Way to
be. Let's go with that.
Although there is a flask in the studio. All right, we got to go. Brady, great stuff, man. Have a wonderful weekend.
Have a good one, guys.
You bet. Brady Papingas.